Hello, good morning. This is the Edge and Flow podcast. My name is TJ Schwartz. I'm here with Lucas Burnley, and we are discussing knives, knife industry things, making, mental health, and family activities alongside of a business and just self-employment and self-improvement, all the kinds of things. So, how you doing, Luke?
I'm good, man. All long game. It's like long game things. I actually just listened to a podcast that had an interesting perspective, which is we spend so much time on long game plans that it can like drastically change your day to day for like maybe in the immediate, like not such a good like way. And I really liked it. It was basically an argument to like play more. And they're like, there is very rarely a point where you're like, oh, me playing, having fun doing this thing is for the long game, like in our lizard brains. But the argument was essentially it's like incorrect. They're like, no. Like by playing, you like extend the longevity, right?
Well,
Like,
and in some ways too, a long game strategy is in support of your ability to play.
totally.
You know what I mean?
But it's easy to like miss that, like get
Yeah.
off the path where you're, like if you look at it from like an investing standpoint, I think it's like the idea of saving all of your money for later. This was like huge in like the FIRE community where they're like, I am gonna front load all of my discomfort now. I'm gonna like, eat rice and beans every day and like put all of my money away for the next 10 years, and then I don't have to worry about money again. And over time, a lot of the thought process like shifted because
Yeah.
people realize like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like
I don't
there's a
agree.
balance point,
Yeah, there is.
right?
I wouldn't say I agree with like, nothing's guaranteed,
Nothing's
you gotta
guaranteed.
live now. Yeah.
Yeah, but like work is also the same way. And I think that like I get in those loops where I'm like, oh, I'm not gonna like I get an idea for something and I'm like, well, it's not gonna be something I make as a product. And I'm just not, I don't need to like focus on that right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but if I just let myself do that thing, it might generate a bunch of other ideas. Like maybe my brain is trying to latch on to like a level of creativity that wouldn't otherwise be there. I don't know. Okay.
That's fair.
There's our heady thought for the morning. You got a bunch going on. You just got back from the Makers Syndicate show.
I did.
Okay, dude, I don't really know anything about this show.
Yeah, so Daniel Osborne, who founded Oz Machine Company, and his wife Jenna, they created this show because they live like an hour from Indianapolis, and they thought Indianapolis would be a great place for a show. And they conceptualized this show. This is the second year they've done it, but they conceptualized this show where everybody that comes, that's invited, it's sort of an invitational. It kind of feels like, I'm not sure if they actually call it that. But at this point it kind of is, but it's basically, because it's the Maker Syndicate, it is exclusively products that are made by the people that are there. So that so there's no, even if you're a company that has in-house and OEM stuff, you just have to only bring the in-house stuff, because it's not only a show to sell product, but it's also a show. And I noticed this very distinctly when I got there, is that you go kind of to the hotel bar after or before the show, and everybody is like, what CNC are you running? What is this? How are you sharpening? What are you doing here? And it's like, if they're there, it's because that they are doing some type of making or manufacturing. And so it's just like a high density kind of do it yourself crowd. And it's really cool.
Dude, I love this so much because it's actually there's a phase shift here. Okay? Which do I it, that's that honestly that is I got like tingles when you're talking about it because there's a transparency there and an openness that is like I think exactly what our industry needs, but it's also there's like a generational shift where they are essentially just focusing on the aspect of a person or team making the product that is there.
And that's not to say that it's American made either, because there's international people there that it's not purely a USA made. It's that that person made it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that, and that's that's what I'm loving about this, right? I really think our industry right now is struggling around some concepts, like the Mac thing, machine assisted custom, to me is such a nebulous like grab at trying to explain something so that you can make it separate, as opposed to looking at knives and being like, okay, like here's the processes that were involved in them. Mm-hmm. It's not that you necessarily have to like shoehorn it off in a different way. I get it, but
that it's there's always this tendency as humans to like classify and define. And it's very difficult because manufacturing is always a spectrum. It's never 100% in-house. It's never really, because raw materials, you know what I mean? And all this stuff. So it's obviously, for a show like this, you kind of have to look at it and see the forest for the trees. If it's like, can you honestly say you made it? Yes. Right. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
That's
and good. what does that mean? Are you, is it coming off a CNC machine and in like a very finished state? Are you outsourcing water jet? Are you having parts laser cut? Are you buying pivots that are turned by Steve Kelly?
Yeah.
Like there's this, it's so interesting because I'm just, I honestly, I can't believe it's still being talked about, like in a way, like how are people still like digging into this as like a problem? As opposed to just focusing on like, there are small businesses that are making product that we like that are super cool. Here's how this product is made. Oh, this one over here is different. Mm-hmm. And you see this like even inside of the production world, different, like if you are a full production company, different companies make their products differently. But I don't feel like there's this urge to like try to like way over explain it and categorize it or use it as like a sales pitch in a way. It's interesting, man. So I love that that to me is exactly what a show should be doing, which is building community, building network, and educating. So a customer comes there, they learn because they get to talk to the people that are making the product.
The customers are learning, and you know, people that are just walking around. But also, like I said, some of the great value that I got out of that show was just before and after. You know, it's a weekend affair, but the show's only 5 hours, so you have a lot of time to just kind of hang out, go to dinner or lunch with makers, and you're sitting around with just a lot of small time makers, because you know, you don't see too many like really big companies. It's a lot of like 1 to 5 man shops. That was kind of like the whole show. And so it's just people that are in my category, you know what I mean? And so it was, you realize when you're sitting at dinner that it's like, wow, this is a very interesting group, in that we can bounce ideas off each other in a very like eye to eye kind of way. And it was really fun. It was,
that is 100% the value of a show. This is why, like we had talked in the past, I'm like, I want you to do one of the smaller shows, right? Because you coming from like the design side, you were doing the big industry trade shows. You're doing Blade Show and SHOT Show. Right. And then this year you did Blade Show with a table, different experience. And I think that now, like shifting into the smaller, more like intimate maker shows, it gives you just like a more complete view of the market.
Yeah.
But also like there's so much value in the 5 hour show one day, where you have a day or two on the sides to actually just like hang out with people.
Mm-hmm. No, it was fantastic. And it's once again, we did well at the show. It's once again, an indication of what I was talking about though, of like, the segmentation of the industry, how you have kind of the EDC field. And this is definitely an EDC, very like a lot of folders, frame locks, EDC accessories. It's not just knives. And so we were a little bit peripheral. Like if you were to look at the spectrum of everyone was there, we were definitely one of the most like fringe as far as this core audience that's there, because we're kind of more of an outdoor hunting camping
Right.
brand. So,
Right.
it, but that, I mean, that doesn't bother me at all, but it's kind of helped, like you just said, seeing different shows in different settings is like sort of feel what the shape of these different segments of the industry are.
Yeah.
So it was really good for like, just fundamentally, like the Overland Sport sells well in the EDC
right.
environment. But like I had, I kind of noticed like in a scene like that, the bigger the knife, the further away you're getting from like that core customer
Right.
base.
Right.
So that's interesting.
I think there's timeline stuff. Like I think I told you yesterday, like, like small blades are where the sales are, and like big blades like catch people. There's like a visceral response, I think, like for knife people, right? And this is where EDC starts to like diverge a little bit, where if I would go to the USN show and if I had a big fixed blade on my table, I know that that knife is going to get a huge amount of attention just because of people's like love of knives and like where they probably came into the industry. Like that was a show where most of the people there, like the base product was knives. With the EDC community, it actually shifts. You start to have people that are coming in from like other, they might be coming in from pens.
Watches,
they might come
yeah.
from flashlights, watches. Like a big, huge knife may actually not create like the same visceral emotional response.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's just interesting.
It is. And it's, I've found it very interesting how our number one seller, like for our whole brand, was the Overland Sport. And then we launched the LT5. So, and it's our smallest knife. So it kind of indicates like its presence in the EDC world. And then launched the LT5, which is by far our biggest knife. And it surpassed the Sport as the number one seller. So it's like the number one and number two sellers are the biggest and the smallest knife.
Yeah.
But if you look at the LT5 in the target audience, which is not the EDC audience, it's considered a medium to small size knife.
Right.
Because it's in a sphere with like the sizing parameter of a knife is totally different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I would consider that like a mid-size knife. It's not big.
Yeah,
which is
exactly.
crazy to say when you look at it compared to your other product.
Yeah. And it's
because
funny,
it is big.
In an EDC world, it's like, whoa, look at that monster. And then you go, talk to bushcraft guys and they're like, oh, that's a cute little guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're like, I'd like another 5 inches on it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah,
you know, I still think I'm on an LT10 waiting
I know.
For it.
Right.
Here's another thought around this, which is right now, I think you are developing a culture around the work and product that you are making, right? If you continue to extend past, so say there's a point where you are doing folders, right? And you are doing like EDC stuff, or you have a little division that does that. You will now have that same core that is like, oh no, man, I want a 20, 23 Overland because they were built this way. But you need that, you'd like the timeline starts to change, right? And I think that it's not something that you can like, I don't think you can necessarily like calculate it, but it is slowly building, right? Like you're building people that have a collection of pieces, or that knife is the aspirational outdoor tool that they want, right? It was, would have been like me looking at, Emerson folders, at like 16 years old and being like, oh man, that Commander is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
We're such nerds. Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. Good on you.
It was a lot of fun. And Indianapolis, it's a nice place.
Yeah.
It's a nice town. I like that. I went into it interestingly because my sister married a guy from there this summer, and there's tiny little bit of talk of like possibly moving back there for
Oh,
them.
yeah.
And so when I went there, I was like,
checking it out.
I actually want to know about this town because if they do move here, then I'm going to be visiting like family
Right.
here.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of investigating the, just what's going on here. And I really like the town. I mean, it's bigger than Boise, but it doesn't feel that much bigger.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more sprawl to it or something, but it feels similar.
kind of same vibe. Maddie has family there. We need to get back there at some point. All right, man. So, okay. I love it. Maker Syndicate. If anybody hears this, good job. Way to help the industry. I love it. I love any kind of positive change.
Positive change.
Yeah. Positive change. Yeah. I just think that is, it sounds like the way that they are setting the show up it's a positive shift.
Yeah.
It's rad. No,
that was really good.
Nice work. Mm-hmm. What else do we got? What do you want to talk about next, man?
You've been doing some deep diving on a certain topic. You want to fill us in?
Yeah, man. This is a love hate experience right now. But it is super sticky, I think is how I would describe it. I owe probably like the majority of my visibility to not necessarily social media, but like the internet, as do probably most of my contemporaries. For me early on, it was forums. Would you consider, I guess a forum would be social media.
Yeah.
Would you consider that? It's not the media element kind of, but.
Yeah, I would say basically.
All right. Semantics. But so forums convert to Instagram and Facebook. Basically, like forums still operate, right? And there's like core group that still are like on these forums. But for the most part, everyone's on Facebook and Instagram, and then generationally like TikTok. But the game has changed. If you look at Instagram specifically, the way that the algorithm moves content has changed. Okay. And if you are specifically in the knife industry, and honestly, at this point, a few other industries that like really don't make any sense, there's a very high chance that you're going to have your content restricted because it goes against community standards. I've been seeing like a lot of just like chatter from people and like a general tone. I think there's some like misunderstanding around what's happening, but also the frustration is like very justified. I think ultimately what's happening, I think we're getting picked up by AI and based on either text or, you know, like image recognition, like a post will just get like, oh, that's a weapon, or oh, that's violent content or something like that. What is hard is none of it. There's no clear path. Like there's nobody knows why one post gets flagged and another doesn't. Right. Have you experienced this?
Yeah, I've had a few posts flagged. I didn't really think I had, but there were a few flagged and I don't remember getting a notification. Yeah. And what the annoying thing was is, so it was like either modify or delete these three posts.
Right.
And they were like the most benign. It was like,
totally.
It was, you know, I there was no real reason. I couldn't tell any difference between my other posts, but I was like, fine, I'll delete them. I don't care.
Yeah.
So I go to hit delete and it's like, cannot delete. I'm like, try it again, delete, cannot delete. And so I tried to delete them all like five times, like refresh the app, tried to delete, and it wouldn't delete them. So I went to like my main feed and I found that post and I hit delete, wouldn't delete. And I'm like, so they want me to delete them, but the app is glitching and it won't delete. So I kind of threw my hands in the air and I need to circle back to that. But
that's a new one. I haven't heard that.
I don't think that's like some sabotage. I think that's just a glitch. It's like,
well, and I think that for me, that is the baseline. Is I don't necessarily think, you know, it's Meta, it has it out for us.
Yeah.
I don't think they know we exist. We're such a small industry. Like it's just not, I don't think we're on the radar. Mm-hmm. Right. That said, we have a couple options. It's like you leave the platform or you figure out how to operate within the parameters of the
Which is where you're going.
Which is where I'm going. And like this, I mean, at this point, it's like everything else. It's like it's being politicized almost. And it's like, I'm like, look, I like Instagram. I want to figure out how to keep having a presence on Instagram. So started 3 weeks ago, with a different like content production plan. And it's working. Right now, this is actually a great example of something where I'm like, I don't necessarily have a long game in mind. I am just having fun with it as an experiment and learning, but I'm seeing real results. So I've got a post this morning. I opened it up and I'm at 480,000 views. That post was, you know, I think we did that Wednesday night. Dude, I've never had anything hit that hard.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. So I don't, basically doing like a 2 month test. And at the end of 2 months, we will see what the results are. But part of where my head has been at with this is like learning. So say you have a blocked post. Okay. Or say that 90% of your feed is blocked, but my feed is unrestricted and I have a crazy views on posts. If I create a collaborative post with you, I get those views. It trickles to you. I don't think that your ban affects my post. So it's just like, I'm looking at this from like a strategic standpoint, and same thing, like around community. And it's like, okay, if some of us are just getting flagged because all we want to do is post like a still image of a knife, and that's the problem. The problem is that the photo is like focused on knives or something like that. Are there workarounds?
Yeah.
That's interesting to me. And then, dude, man, I've always wanted to monetize social media. There are so many different ways to do it. And this for me is just kind of this experiment of like, okay, like I do have content being like that is available. Like we can create content around the work. Is there a way to create a revenue stream around that content in a way that is close to passive?
Yeah.
So it's got, I've probably been spending a little more time on it than I want, but
it's a worthwhile thing though, because eyeballs are the base currency today. And if you're not worried about that, then you're in trouble potentially.
Yeah. I mean, and this is where what I'm seeing is I'm seeing a lot of people that I feel like are close to tapping out. I think that there's this sense of like, look, I've like worked really hard. I've like built a following. I have a customer base. I don't want to learn content creation. And I totally get it. I think that for me, it's tying into long game thoughts of like scale, where I'm like, yeah, I can sell everything I make right now. And I can probably increase the amount that I make. And I can probably do that for a while. But if you're not bringing new eyes onto the brand and new, you know, collectors into communities, I think that it's a matter of time.
Yeah.
And it might be organic. And these are the unknowns, right? Just totally unknown. I think for me, I'd look at it just as another area of diversification. So like I seem to be quoting Ben Peterson a lot lately from NAFS.
Shout out Ben.
Yeah. Shout out Ben, friend of the pod. It really stuck when he was like, you just want to own your own land, whatever you can get close to. If you can get close to owning land, you want to do that. Mailing list, you know, closed Facebook group, whatever it is, our pod, all of these things are diversification so that we can have a foothold that if one of them falls, you have essentially like support in place.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
So that's where I'm at.
That's great, man. Yeah. I've been watching the content. It's fresh. It looks good. Makes me jealous. I want to do something like that eventually.
It's really good. And it's like, the thing is, right? Like I've got help editing, right? I've got eyes on it. I've got someone that I'm accountable to film content, and I'm paying for it. So the question is, does it even out?
Yeah.
Right. Because we literally cannot do everything. And right now it's like, to be a maker, you also kind of at a certain level or with certain desires, like you have to be a content creator, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
Did not sign up for that.
Yep. It's a default addition to the self-employed schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I did SHOT Show having a very similar thought. I was at the CRKT booth and they were getting ready to like film and or do like an interview. And I'm like, I didn't sign up for this. Like this part, like being on camera is not necessarily like the independent craft person's like,
yeah,
you know, skill set.
Being a personality. Yeah.
So it's in general, I think there's a lot being asked of you as a maker right now. And that's like as people too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the kind of goes back to a conversation we've had before, which is that it's a blessing and a curse, because obviously we just went over the curse of this is a new to-do list item, but the blessing is it's created this kind of demonopolizing effect in a lot of industries, because guess what? You can reach eyeballs out of your apartment if you want, you know what I mean? Whereas previously it was like, you got to get into a magazine, you got to buy ad space, you got to buy a television ad, you got to get into a trade show that's big and you got to stay there for 10 years. And so now it's like, no, with the right moves, you have it's just more democratic, I guess. You can get in there
the beginning. That's the way I'm looking at it now. Is like, I've never paid for advertising, right? I think at this point, I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, I should pay for some advertising. What is that I'm going to do?
Yeah. What form? Yeah.
What form of advertising am I going to do? And what is the overarching value? So here's like, just like some base metrics. I posted about this in the Patreon. And I don't know, you know, like our listener base, like I don't know how many people are like tracking this stuff or super interested in it. But one of the interesting points for me was looking at a post and seeing how many eyeballs were current followers versus how many new eyeballs were on that post. In general, I'm about 95% follower. So the people that are seeing my posts are already following me. Okay. A few of the posts that I've had over the last month have started to flip that trend. And now I've got a few that are up like completely reversed, 97% non-follower. And right now, that's crazy in our industry. Like being able to generate real views. And then also I had flatlined in followers. I actually don't know how long, but like more than a year. I fluctuate. I'll pick up a few, I'll drop a few. Then, you go up 100 and it's 6 months. In the last 3 weeks, I've picked up close to 2,000 followers.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That is, so if you look at that from the standpoint of an ad, if some percentage of those become customers, that is pretty valuable.
It's a big deal. Yeah.
It's a big deal. So
yeah,
2 months, I'll check back. We can have like a recap and see like, what does it look like in 2 months?
Yes. I want to know.
Okay. So that's social media. Love to hate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's very quiet in the shop this week over here.
I heard.
Dalton took a week off, which is awesome. He's hunting with his dad, I believe, up in central Idaho, trying to put down a deer or two.
Archery and season.
Yes, it is. So, yeah, that's what they're up to. And it's been on the calendar for kind of weeks or months. So we kind of staged things for this a little bit. And then I didn't come into the shop till Tuesday because I flew in on Monday from Indiana. And then I met with a business coach also on Wednesday, which kind of knocked me out of the shop, which is great as well. But so the shop was, it's the quietest either this shop or the garage shop has pretty much ever been for a week. So
dude, I love to hear that for all of those reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that is one, you're in a position where Dalton taking off doesn't tank you,
mm-hmm.
right? Or throw you behind. Amazing. He's out doing something rad with family.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to a business coach. You also just got back from a show. And we talked about this a little before we started recording. I think there is so much value as a maker to like let things breathe a little bit, like coming back from a show, taking a day, 2 days, whatever, and letting things just like simmer and reconnecting with your family a little bit, as opposed to just like going back to the grind.
Yep. Yep.
But I want to talk about the coach.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
backstory first.
So my dad's a Western saddle maker. He's really tied in with the Western world of arts and crafts. So the four main quadrants of that being rawhide braiding, bit and spur making, silversmithing, and saddle making. Well, so he comes to know, especially in Idaho, a lot of people that do those four things.
Yeah.
And there's a guy who in his retirement has become a rawhide braider. And so I don't know how my dad met him exactly, but just through the channels of that world. And so he's a retired corporate guy who is a rawhide braider now. But he had a lot of experience at some of the highest levels of business. He was the president of Coinstar, which is like the coin thing that you see at Walmart or whatever, yep. where they
cash in your change, they take 10%.
Yeah. So like, I don't know, 2009 to 2014, he was the president of that company. And then amongst, you know, all kinds of different stuff. And then he's been part of different advisory groups. So even in his retirement, retirement from full-time work, he's still been advising, sitting on boards, working with companies. But I think for him, he really likes the craftsman and the small business because he's a ranch kid that is still into the Western thing. And so we're not quite in line with the Western thing, but we're still a small manufacturing company that
in the West is,
like, yeah
you're
yeah,
still, you know, in the life, like,
yeah. And so my dad has a podcast, interestingly enough, shout out to him, and he had Mike, this guy's name is Mike Skinner, and he had Mike on like 3 or 4 times to talk business because my dad wanted to kind of pick his brain and then share that to their followers about small business craftsmanship and how that could be influenced or assisted by the way that some big businesses operate. And I listened to him talk for like those 2 or 3 podcasts. And I was like, well, I'd love to talk to that guy. He's in Boise, just 40 minutes from here. So I had my dad kind of make an introduction. We got to talking. This was like 6 or 8 months ago, maybe a year ago. And showed him the shop. And then he's like, you know, I'd love to work with you and kind of, you know, I do some coaching services. And I said, yeah, and let me think about that. So it kind of sat on ice. And then this week, finally, we're going. He's going to come in as just kind of helping me as an advisory role, kind of coaching role. And it's, I'm really excited about it, having some knowledge of, you know, as you grow a business, it's like, I can see immediately how it'll be over my head, you know, just
right
from a just business, even just economic, like, you know, how do you structure things? And I'd love to have a voice just helping me there. So
you don't know what you don't know.
Yep.
This is, I think, again, man, one, it's actually, I've worked with a coach for, it's probably a little over a year. My coach is not business specific, right? And this is something that I'm excited to hear a little bit more about, because I would also like coaching specifically around like the numbers and plans. I'm really curious to see what it does for you or how you utilize it.
Yeah. And
it's a good plan.
The kind of, the first, he came out of the shop for 3 or 4 hours this week, and it was, he wanted to just ingest everything he could.
Yeah.
Ask a lot of questions, dig deep into just everything, how the business works. What's the business model? Who are the customers? What is the, like, what's revenue? What's profit? Net profit? Like, all, even, you know, aspects that I don't even know, like the definition of, like,
mm-hmm.
There's different types of profit. There's different types of, you know, expenses. So we were just digging in, looking at QuickBooks, going through everything. So he just wanted to like fire hose ingest of overall feel
yep.
of the company. And then he had me kind of tell him some of the goals that I have, both on a personal level and on a business level, and see and like check them against each other. Do they align? And then he kind of describes part of what he would like to help me with is as like pure as accountability. So yeah. he's like going to remember and write down the goals that I said I had.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we were going to meet once a month and he has a list where I'm going to track whether you're following what you said you were going to do on your goals.
Yeah.
And he's going to call me if I don't. So that's going to be interesting.
That the accountability component, I think, is one of the main values in working with someone, whether that is like in coaching, counseling, therapy, whatever, however you want to like, or whatever aspect it is. The necessity to explain what you want, to verbalize it to someone other than yourself.
Yes.
And then have them come back in 3 months and be like, okay, where are we at on this? Or have you taken these steps? Or it is difficult. And there are points where I've like really struggled because I'm like, I don't know what I want. Or like, okay, but yeah, but this shifted now. Okay. Mm-hmm. So or I'm doing something and I'm like, does this align with my overarching goal? So we actually, in my last coaching session, we talked about the social media component. Cause I was like, I can't tell if I'm doing this just because it's interesting and there's novelty to it, right? Or if it aligns with the overarching goals. And Terrence was like, all right, well, let's kind of figure out where this goes.
Yeah.
And he gave me a really simple reframe. And that reframe was just, he's like, look, the way that you are talking about what you're doing with social media is community building. And he's like, if we go to your values, community is one of your top values.
Absolutely.
He's like, this is absolutely in alignment. And I was like, I had not thought about it that way. I had not framed it that way. And as soon as he said it, all of kind of the question around whether it was a good decision or not was gone.
Yeah. And we talked about this like 2 weeks ago on the phone. And I think I told you that you have, like, whether you like it or not, you do have sort of an influencer presence. You have that ability, and you have what, not like the old usage of the word influencer before it became social media, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But like at Blade Show, like you're one of the influential people, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like no one's going to argue that. And so it's your ability to be influential and inspiring, I think, makes this fit what you're doing.
Right.
So I fully agree.
But that, I think right there, it's crazy because you're doing it. You know why you're doing something, and then it's like almost like you lose the thread.
Yeah.
Just having someone, you second guess it. Cause it's hard, man. I mean, we make so many decisions and the risk of failure is real, you know, or making a mistake or wasting money or wasting time. So, dude, I'm psyched for you. So you guys are going to meet once a month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
I meet every 2 weeks with mine.
He basically said once a month, but he's like, I'm on call. So if there's like, okay, something happened, give me a call. But once a month for basically he wants to see, he gave me like a workbook or like a set of papers here. And so like one of them is, he calls it like the dashboard. So it's like, it's metrics that he wants to see that matter to him to know what's happening.
Oh.
And so I just need to get this filled out before we meet every month. And I need to have this completed for the previous month that just finished so that he has like apples to apples comparable from month to month.
Yeah.
That's not in some metric situation that I came up with. That's like, no, these are the metrics I want to know.
Yeah.
That he knows are like where the true pulse is. And so that's the number side, but then other pages, you know, are like, okay, did you have a revenue goal? Did you hit it? Did you have a goal, not necessarily revenue, but I want to put more hours into doing XYZ and whatnot. So yeah, I'm interested. So it's only just getting started, but I think, you know, a year from now, if we continue this, I think it could be big. So
just that alone, you're going to sit down every month and you are going to track data and then analyze it with outside eyes. Just that alone is huge. And this is, I think this is where some people, it's like marketing. Why am I going to pay someone to come in and like tell me about my business, or I can do this on my own? There's levels. Mm-hmm. There's levels to the game. Like when you, like when I realized like my coach has a coach, you know, or you like look and you're like, okay, you know, this is how successful people operate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like everybody needs help. You actually can't do everything on your own.
Yeah.
And admitting that, and admitting like blind spots. Right. I love that quote that any man is educated who can, what is it, locate information and apply it. So it's like, yeah, that's why books are amazing, or yeah, YouTube. Like I just saw a video yesterday. Guys, like, how did I learn how to build this house? I watched YouTube videos and built a house.
Yeah.
And like locate info and apply it.
And another part of it for me was, I track a lot of things. That's just the way my brain works, is I spreadsheet a lot of things. I like the analogy I have is like, I want to have a lot of gauges on my dash.
Yeah.
And over the last 12 years, I've like come out with some pretty obscure gauges to read of like, okay, what's happening with this? You know, how many units of each model am I selling? What's the mix?
Yeah.
So I have a lot of that, but here's the thing. I'm the only one that's really ever looked at it.
Right.
And so I felt this urge to, it's like, I like this number. I think it's good, but I don't know if I'm right. If that, like, is this amount of debt to this amount of revenue good?
I think it's just what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Right?
And so I'm like, I just want someone that knows what they're looking at to say, no, that is good. Or like, no, it looks good, but you're missing this factor. Like you forgot that the taxes are going to, you know, come out of that. And that's not what you think it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't in this psychosis of like,
tricking
I built
yourself.
The system and I'm the only one that knows about it. And I'm like off on in the weeds and I don't realize it, you know?
Yeah.
So
I love that. I love that, man. There is it. Just thinking about like the tax thing. That's like, that was one of the first really big financial mistakes I made. Was I had a year where I doubled my revenue, but I didn't change anything because I was paying my taxes at the end of the year. I got to the end of the year, I didn't have the tax money. I had some because I was saving like I was for the year before.
Yeah.
But I wasn't tracking.
It's tails all this time.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. I'm kind of the opposite. So I love data, but I don't create it. I am pretty emotional. Like I track like how things feel to me. Now that I brought Joey on to help with some project management, he does spreadsheets and I love it so much.
Yeah.
I've never done it in that way.
Yeah.
And I would love to learn. I would love to integrate that, but I don't know. I just don't know if it's me.
Yeah.
So,
and that's fair. That's where delegation comes in. It's like, that's where the social media thing, if I were to try to do what you're doing, I would have to delegate because I like looking at spreadsheets for some weird reason. I like, you know, working in programming a CNC machine. That's kind of where my head goes. And so the a little bit more ethereal outreaching stuff is where I'd have to delegate, which is what you're doing the opposite of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, and it's, but it's the same thing about accountability, right? And outside ideas. So when the guys come in and film, there's a lot where I'm like, that's not even interesting to me. And they're like, no, it is interesting. It's just not interesting to you.
Yeah.
That's not
normal
the goal
for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the accountability. It's like things I had had, as I started this process, I called a few friends to see about like pricing and like how much I should be paying for this. And what I kind of came up with was everyone was like, oh, that's like, yeah, that's expensive. It's money. They're like, but if you were just having videos edited, you would be at this price. And what I realized was it's like ADHD tax, man. For me to do it, I actually need the accountability. it can't be left up to me in this case.
Yeah.
It's just too easy to make an excuse to why I don't want to film today.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
It's the same. I think it'll be the same for you, where you're like, everything's going. I'm doing more business. This is not where my time is best spent, like digging into this thing that I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Now with coach, there's accountability.
Yep. Yep. That's a fact.
Pretty cool. What's the quote about like things that get tracked, get attended
things,
to? There's like
things that get measured, get managed.
Things that get measured, get managed. So
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's every month. Now you have something that you are measuring, and mm-hmm. then it gives you a game plan for the next month.
Yeah.
I yep. love it.
Yeah, I'm excited. It felt really good hanging out with him and stuff. And I kind of knew, because listening to him on a podcast, it's like for 3 hours, because my dad's co-host Wilson Capron had hired him like a year ago. And so a lot of the podcast was them talking about their relationship, about how things have gone.
Yeah.
And so I was sort of hearing like almost a real time sort of review of how that was working. And I was really interested. I felt like I had too much going on with the whole shop move and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was like, after the shop settles down, I'm going to get him in here. So
call out the name of the pod.
Monday Mornings with Carrie and Willie.
Oh, that's classic.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'll go check
yeah.
it out.
Yeah.
Dude, I love it. Yeah. Interesting, man. The knife industry is, I don't know if it's a split, right? Because you have a portion of it, of people that are pretty business minded. And then you have people that are very like creative maker minded.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is we can all benefit from each other.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that thoughts that are around larger businesses enter into the conversation as much as they should.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the things that I'm always hammering on, which are like, you know, having insurance, you know, having like paying attention to retirement, like all mm-hmm. of these thoughts, they come from a world that is not small craftsmen.
Yeah.
Not really. Until that small craftsman turns into a big business.
And there are things that are often ignored by the small craftsman too.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I'm definitely of the opinion that when it comes to business structure, you need to have certain things happening in the business well before they're required.
Yes.
And by that, I mean, like, if you really want to grow a business, like, you should start thinking about setting up an LLC pretty early and yeah. start to file taxes as if yeah. you were going to be bigger than you are. Because like, that's one thing I ran into, is I waited really long to switch over. And I was like, man, I should have just been doing this all along, because I had to like relearn accounting, basically.
Yeah.
And so that's where, with this guy coming in, that's part of it. He's helping me with, like, when you go to cash based accounting, it's totally different than like a sole proprietorship.
Yeah.
And so I want, basically, one of my things that I'm kind of asking him about is like, what's missing from the way I run my business that someone about three times my size would have to do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yep. That's the on-ramp, like on-ramp as an analogy, like imagine getting onto a freeway without an on-ramp.
Yeah.
You just get dropped onto it.
Yeah.
That is very different than having this nice, you know,
mm-hmm.
gradual path where you can get up to speed. You want on-ramps.
Yep. Yep.
Dang.
So I need to hire a bookkeeper. That was like the to-do list item number one that came out of the get together.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah.
I think that one is, again, it's just an efficiency, and it's mm-hmm. someone else to talk to. And like the way that I work with my bookkeeper, like I still do my QuickBooks. She reviews everything.
Mm-hmm.
I have quarterly meetings with her. And that for me right now is enough. It could very well get to the point where I actually need help managing my books.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Is she part of like an agency? How do you hire a bookkeeper?
So she is not. She is an accountant. And this is, it's funny. I was thinking about this yesterday for some weird reason. I met her when I had my first employee and I was trying to teach my employee QuickBooks and realizing that I didn't know QuickBooks well enough to teach her. and sent her to a class at SCORE. And she met Suzanne, and then Suzanne started kind of helping us a little bit. And I don't know, 14 years later, Suzanne's still my accountant.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's good.
She was basically an accountant who did like QuickBooks classes also. If I had to do it again, I don't know what I would do. And she's in New Mexico. So mm-hmm. we've had, you know, I just really value our relationship.
Yeah.
We kept her when we moved to Cape Cod. She had to figure out some weird Massachusetts stuff. You know, when we were here, she's figuring out weird Oregon stuff.
Yeah.
I also have a CPA. The CPA is part of a firm.
Mm-hmm.
But what you realize is like as a team, they are providing different services because yes. there are questions that when it goes to the CPA, Suzanne is not, that's not like in her yeah. wheelhouse.
CPA is a strategist and they just want aggregate numbers.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, the bookkeeper is more, how do I get those numbers to be correct?
Yeah.
To then, yeah.
Yeah. They like the last year the CPA caught something in Oregon where they were like, hey, and this is a great example of me not tracking metrics. We talk about it at the time. I understand what they're saying. And now I couldn't give you a percentage, but I'm basically, there's this like a different way of paying estimated taxes. And they were like, in Oregon, this is super beneficial. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, let's do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just like little things where I would like never shift. You just stay static.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, it sounds like you ask your coach. If
yeah.
he knows any accountants
I've got a good CPA too, so I might ask him as well.
Yeah, perfect. And that this is any system too, which is if you have a system or a network that likes working together, I think there's value in that. There's obviously there can be pitfalls, but in general, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, right? Sure.
Like, oh, I know them, I trust them. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
Okay.
That was a good week though in that regard. Is a good week to kind of reflect and think a little bit, especially with him coming in and a little bit quieter in the shop. I felt like I was kind of taking stock a little bit because it's been such a rush. So it feels good.
You guys have moved very quickly, but in a really organic way. If that makes sense, like you haven't pushed anything, you haven't rushed anything. You have just gotten exponentially faster. And like the business is scaling exponentially, but it also is not something that you're like forcing. You're not pushing the rope. Like it is just happening.
It does feel that way. And honestly, I'm really, really pleased with that. I'm fortunate. That's for sure. Because in a lot of ways, I think what I'm doing, where my head is at, is I'm actually pulling back a little bit on the growth. Like I always feel like I'm resisting it a little bit, just a little bit, and then just like allowing it, which is a pretty good feeling because it gives me a pretty good feeling of like being able to manage it in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to make sure we're checking all the boxes before we let it grow more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going pretty good. I'm happy.
Good. It feels weird sometimes doing that. I think like you're almost like putting the brakes on.
Yeah.
It's like, just want to let the pony run.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Like let's go.
Yep.
Yeah. But I think that is the smarter way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love it. What else we got, man? Is that an episode right there?
Yeah, I think so.
Feels pretty good.
Yeah.
Got some what is that work? That's like we're doing the internal work right now. There's a lot of like little behind the scenes things that are happening that I feel like are necessary. Maybe it's a seasonal change. Who knows?
I'll throw one thing out that's actually about knives.
Okay.
And that is we're launching the Lost Trail 5 configurator today. But if you were listening to this, it would have been a few days ago, but on Friday, the 20th.
Nice. I still struggle with that too. I'm like, I'm gonna put this in the show notes, and they're like, that doesn't come out for a week.
Yeah, but yeah. So we're gonna people have been asking for it. It's kind of our hallmark. We offer custom configuration on all the other models. It's finally time. You can custom order an LT5.
Nice.
So that'll be good.
It's big. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Patreon supporters, we appreciate you guys for helping us keep this running. As always, let us know if you have any questions or if there's a topic you want us to chop it up on.
You bet. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you all so much.
Take it easy.
Peace.